You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. I'm excited to join the team as your new host. There's something you should know about me. I've always been more into politics than sports. But at one stage, I was politically active and physically active at the same time. I was in year five and the school didn't have a girls' soccer team. So a group of us started a petition and started hustling for signatures. One Saturday, we had to run a bake sale on the day of the state election. The guy who was running for premier showed up. He was followed by TV cameras who filmed him coming to buy a sweet treat from us. Like any good bake seller would, we knew it was the perfect opportunity to really make a difference. So we asked him to sign our petition, and he did, and then we got a girls' soccer team. But the problem was that I obviously had to join, and as much as I cared about the injustice of it all, I did not care about soccer. I ended up playing soccer for 6 months, and I was really proud of our team, but I still hated soccer. Maybe you're like me and you didn't grow up enjoying sport. In our first story, we meet someone who found her sport as an adult and made some adjustments.
Gina Marie is pretty unique, just like her name.
It's all one word. My mother loved my name because she made it. You know, she wanted to call me Georgina or Red Jean. She was coming up with different things just to be different. But then she thought, Georgina, they'll call her George. Well, she wasn't happy with me being George. So Regina, same. She thinks they call me Reg. So she came up with her own version, which no one really gets.
It's not a very common name.
No, it's nobody's called Gina Marie.
And on Friday evenings, Gina Marie hops on a tram during peak hour traffic. She then changes trams before arriving at her tennis club. Being from Melbourne, it often means she's sharing a ride with footy crowds or anyone else heading into the city for the night.
It's a very packed tram and I usually can't get to the driver, so I just have to ask people to let me know when I'm at my stop.
It can be a long journey, but it's all worth it because tennis is central to Gina Marie's life, but it hasn't always been that way.
The truth is, with regard to tennis, that is brand new. That is brand new in my life because I was not good at sport as a school child, and I was truly bullied because it was in the days of sink or swim. You know, the teacher says everyone play this game, and if you can't catch the ball, then the children don't want to play with you. I just couldn't catch it. It was just not going to happen. I'd miss it.
This hasn't stopped Gina Marie from playing sport. However, her tennis game is a bit different than your normal tennis game.
Oh, it's extremely different in regard to the ball, yet the rules are the same, except few variations. The ball is a dense foam ball and it has a bell in it.
Because Gina Marie is legally blind.
Let's say there's one other participant on the other side of the net and they're vision impaired. I have to speak to them so they know the ball's coming. So we have these words. Ready. And the other participant says yes, and then I have 3 seconds to serve the ball and I say play. So they're already ready for it, but we're allowed to have the ball bounce so we can hear it. And in B2 category,
that's the category Gina Marie plays in,
I'm allowed 3 bounces before I send it back.
So I was amazed, really, at the skill, because it's one thing to be able to just hit the ball over, but, finding it first is a whole nother
really game. Really tricky. and we've scraped a lot of tennis rackets on the ground trying to find it.
Gina Marie hasn't always been legally blind. It was around 10 years ago that her vision started to deteriorate, but she doesn't like to dwell on that part of her life. She much prefers to keep her focus on looking forward.
The fact that I'm vision impaired and I once was not vision impaired, I had to rethink, how am I going to wear this? And it came instantly. The thought was, go ahead, just go forward, don't dwell on it, don't hold it to you. I was told that it's a permanent condition, and I had to just straight away come to terms with this new name, legally blind. I was recommended to work with an orientation and mobility instructor. We went on a tram, which she taught me how to put my foot on the step and one on the ground, and ask the driver what number the tram is. So otherwise you could be on the wrong transport. So I've learned to do that. These are really big steps when you're not used to sort of speaking to the driver of a tram or anyone else for that matter. But it's called self-advocacy, and you really have to have a voice because it's one of your tools when your vision is poor.
Being adaptive and open to new experiences has helped Gina Marie transition into what she describes as her new life.
I'm very famous for someone walking past with their phone and not being able to see it, and they say hello into the phone. I always say hello. It's pretty embarrassing. I am interested in people. I love meeting people, so I often, especially on trams, because I don't really use a device on a tram. I just have all these funny little friends that I meet that I don't know them. I may never see them again, but we can have these very in-depth conversations, which are very touching. But I think overall, what I find that human kindness, I can't say that I've met one person from anywhere in particular that has never offered friendship or help or assistance.
These days, Gina Marie is a bit of a star in the world of blind tennis, having represented Australia on the international stage in tournaments across the globe.
And so you've travelled to
Japan first, which we did in 2013, to see how they play. But it was quite funny because of the language. We had someone translating, but we missed a lot of information. There was just a lot of bowing and giving of presents. So it was going to have to be another way that we learned how to play, which was very much going down to Rod Laver Arena, which is where I played first, and just different coaches trying different things.
Did you receive any prizes? How did you place in these tournaments?
I'll show. It's there on the shelf. It's my Fair Play trophy.
In her living room, the Fair Play trophy sits prominently on Gina Marie's shelf. It's a small silver urn crossed by two shiny tennis rackets.
It's a start for someone who never, ever was able to do sport, to actually receive the trophy, which my team awarded me, because I had to play a consolation game with a blind deaf girl and she could only hear a high pitch. And, of course, I wanted her to feel included, but she couldn't hear me say ready when you have to prepare to send the ball. So I had to go higher and higher with my voice before she could hear it. And in the end, I found because my voice dropped, I could only sing it. So I sang the words. And everybody had no idea what was going on because we were in the middle of a tournament, but when they all found out, they were deeply touched. And she beat me by 1 point. I feel that because I've been invited, and I feel like I've been invited into this world that was so closed from me, which is the world of sport, and that I just love it so much, and I'm very grateful that I can be there and I want to absorb as much as I can, even though I'm not the best player, but I'm the happiest. And I really would love to encourage others, because I've always thought if there had been another way to work with a ball, I would have been able to be included at school. If teachers were a little more creative, now that I know that there's all these other possibilities, I feel I'd love to share them. What I really want to say is it's everyone has a chance to rise above anything. It's a decision that can be helped by a counsellor or a special mentor, a person in your life that uplifts you. But mostly it has to come from within you. And when you have that moment, that little light bulb moment that says, just get on with it. Don't look back. Well, then you just go forward and embrace things like blind tennis that were never in your life.
That story was by Lee Robinson. Jordan Fennell was the supervising producer. All the Best exists because we want emerging Australian storytellers to learn how to make audio stories. You can start by pitching to us from any part of Australia, and we'll pair you as one of our supervising producers. Email contact@allthebestradio.com. The ball's in your court. Next up, Gabriella Yastra introduces us to a sport that is ruled by women.
Hi, so my derby name is Madonna. I am number 13 and I usually play as a blocker.
Where does your name come from?
It's basically the derby version of Madonna. I really love her music.
Laura Smith joined her roller derby league after her friend invited her to a roller rink.
She said, oh, I really want to practice because I want to join this roller derby team.
Kelly Walker joined her first roller derby league in 2009.
So I go by the name Modern Warfare, and I chose that name specifically because I was used to play video games. After an awful breakup, I took my siblings to the local roller rink in Perth, and there was a flyer there for roller derby, so I thought those chicks look really cool and I want to be like that, so I joined, and yeah.
There have been a few different reiterations of roller derby, but nowadays it is primarily a women's sport, played on a flat oval track using quad skates. A very basic explanation of the sport is, two teams of five players take to the track. One player from each team, called the jammer, tries to pass as many people as possible before the match, or jam as it is called, finishes, while the other four players try to stop the opposing team's jammer. They pack as many jams as possible into the two 30-minute halves. But before they could step onto the track, they had to learn how to fall.
Learning something new is hard. We know that in generally in life, but learning something that is so against our fundamentals of our bodies for 18 months can be quite heartbreaking and require a lot of resilience.
Kelly's roller derby career started in Perth, but she moved to Melbourne after skating at the Great Southern Slam, also known as the TGSS, which is the biggest roller derby tournament in the world and is held in Adelaide.
When I was in my old team, we played at TGSS 2 years ago. We lost by 600 and something points. It was this huge game, but it was such an eye-opening experience for me because it made me realise that high-end derby is not scary. Skaters at that level are just excellent at this sport.
Kelly now plays for the Victorian Roller Derby League B team, the Queen Bees, and trains with the VRDL A team, the All Stars, which is the number one roller derby team in the world.
Their opponents this morning, replete in their blue uniforms with white trim, representing VRDL, is the Queen Bees.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to take a quick look at the team rosters, starting with Victoria, starting with 04, Modern Warfare.
We are athletes. We train like athletes. We act like athletes. We dress like athletes. We perform like athletes. And that is the fundamental idea of underpinning our sport and the way that we see it.
From the scripted bouts in the 60s to the sexual or violent derby names, or uniforms which look more like costumes, historically, derby has been theatrical.
It's not one of the only sports that I can play where, like, it's tough and it's a contact sport, but at the same time I'm wearing a full face of makeup and I get to show off my fun theatrical side as well, which draws a lot of people that I think might not otherwise be involved with other sports.
Roller derby is a sport that mixes traditionally feminine aspects, like costumes and makeup, with a sport that emphasizes traditional masculine traits, such as competition and violence. But roller derby originated as a mixed gender endurance race in the 1880s in the United States of America. In the 60s, roller derby came to television sets in the form of scripted bouts with more hair tearing than skating. But by the 90s, roller derby with its quad skates ceded to the newly popular inline skates. But in the early 2000s, derby was revived in Texas and has spread across the world, including to Australia.
It's historically very much a women's sport. It's to the point where there's derby and there's men's derby. And you don't really get that with, like, very many other sports.
Feminism ties into a lot of the ideals of how we connect with roller derby. So safe space for women, safe space for queer people.
Another way in which roller derby upends traditional gender roles is the derby wife. The role of the derby wife is much like that of traditional wives. They support and empower. But in this same-sex relationship, both parties participate as nurturer and athlete. It may or may not be sexual.
So derby wives are someone in your life who you just adore and you think that they're the greatest human ever and, you know, there's no romantic feelings there, but you just am such a huge fan of this person that you want the opportunity to kind of, you know, share your journey, roller derby journey with them. So you have your derby wife so that you can get matching stickers and cheer each other on and get to say that's my derby wife and I'm here to support my derby wife. And
do you have a derby wife?
I did have a derby wife. She quit long, long, long time ago, but she's also a good mate of mine, so she's still in my life. I think derby wives are strange because, well, not strange, but they're rare, more rare now than they used to be back when I was at that time, years and years and years ago. But I think it ties into what we were talking about before. It's just an opportunity for women to, like, love other women and support them and cheer for them. And yeah, it's just more of that solidarity.
Roller derby is an empowering and revolutionary space for women and gender non-conforming people, allowing them to express themselves outside of acceptable gender norms.
Do you think it's changed your personality?
Yeah, definitely. I think I realized that roller derby offered me the opportunity to be around other women and to learn a lot more about myself, but it's also offered me the opportunity to realize that things that I have been taught to hate about myself are things that I've been taught to hate about myself, and they're not things that are bad or wrong or out of the ordinary. These are just parts of who I am. We'll be right back.
That story was by Gabriella Yastra. Sound design and original composition by Lex Barlin. Jordan Fennell and Allison Chan were the supervising producers. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Alina Godwin. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer. And I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. And join our team. Subscribe to our podcast.